And on the phone with us, with a look at our mountain trails, Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Let's see what we got going on. You do have a beautiful day. It's going to sound like some interesting weather coming at us over the weekend, which from a trail building point of view, we're happy to see because it's been getting pretty dusty out there. So good news in some respects, but it might shut down some activity. First things, Chris from the basin did let us know that his crew has been up working on Mid-Mountain, and they're going to be clearing Red Pine to Ambush Day. So you essentially will have Deer Valley to Red Pine by the end of the day. So that's going to be pretty cool, and it should be relatively dry. Things above Mid-Mountain still have a few spots where trees are down, like on Apex and Keystone, and there's still patches of snow. So we're still not recommending going much up above Mid-Mountain. The the 9K trail, we put a hard closure on. There's still a fair amount of snow on that, and we felt like there's a little bit of definitely a hazard for people hiking. If you slipped off that snow and slid down to where you hit the ground, you'd have up ahead of speed and actually would probably get banged up a little bit. So if you're up that direction, please be very careful if you're on that snow. It's not the best way to go. Speaking of Bonanza Flat has got the roads are open up there, except for it's not up and open over to Brighton. So it's closed at that three-way intersection. The trails up there are not, you know, the Bonanza Loop, 9K, those trails are technically not even finished, and we prefer not to see too many people on them. There is a wildlife concern, so if you're up there with a dog, please keep your dog under significant control. There's a lot of moose up in that area, and they basically are calving, so be extra careful. We also just want to point out, in Round Valley, you will find blue flagging at a variety of intersections, and those that blue flagging is for the Round Valley Rambler, which we're doing virtually. So that flagging will be up for the month. We tried to keep it to a minimum. Please don't tamper with it. It's not a new development or anything like that. It's just basically trying to make sure that people can find the course when they decide to go out and run it. So hopefully that'll work for everybody. Outside of that, I'm thinking I have forgotten something, but I'm not sure what it would be at the moment. So hopefully everyone will have a great weekend, and we'll live through this weather. You know, the weather is always a little bit of a kickback for us in terms of our activities, but on the other hand, it's going to make the trail activities really good going forward. So have a great weekend.
Thanks, Charlie. You too. Well, stay tuned. Coming up in just a minute, I'll be checking in with Summit County Community Development Director Pat Pott. Later on in the hour, Park City Soccer Club President Andrew Way with details about training that is starting, as well as the possibility of holding the Extreme Cut. Finally, Park City Youth Theater Director Jamie Wilcox with details about this summer's youth theater programs. And Robin Cage, she's performing with Randy Barton, has details about the Pharaoh member-only performances of Broadway Faces. Stay tuned. It's 8:13 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Joining me now on the phone, I have Summit County Community Development Director Pat Pott. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Leslie. I hope you can hear me okay. I'm working out of our temporary community development department offices here. So,
and where's that?
My home office today.
It sounds okay so far, so hopefully it stays good. Hey, so since we last talked, anything, any new projects walking through the door?
Well, we average about 5 to 6 new applications a week. Since we talked last month, no new major commercial or multifamily or residential projects have come in. Mostly a lot of requests to amend existing plats, low-impact permits, conditional uses, those sorts of things, but nothing of significance to talk about.
Okay. Let's see. Anything new on talks with Josh Romney and Nate Brockbank, who wanted to pursue the zone change on that 1,000 acres or so southeast of Quinn Junction?
No, all quiet on the eastern front there. I guess just to be a bit more specific, the application that actually came in, which was completed in March, was for about 375 acres. And those properties were sort of an aggregation of properties up along the Browns Canyon area and then around the southeast flanks up into the foothills. Those would be properties up next to Stock Lumber. And then as you view sort of that Quinn's Junction, Richardson's Flat area would be the Mayflower Stickteen Holdings, which are those areas that work up into the hills to the southeast. We still have it out for service provider comments. We haven't scheduled this meeting yet. The earliest it could possibly come to the Planning Commission would be the end of June, maybe early July. I've not had any subsequent conversations with the applicants to date.
All right. Let's see. What happens next with the neighborhood mixed-use zone?
So we have that in front of the county council. I believe the next date we're coming back is in 2 weeks, the 17th, I believe. So not this coming Wednesday, mm-hmm. but the following Wednesday. There's a continued public hearing. We're going to continue to attempt to answer any questions that the council might have. I do believe we will be coming back with an ordinance in the event the council is ready to take action to create that new zone and put it into the development code. But we want to make sure that we've addressed everything that the council sees fit to refine and certainly take any additional comment from the public that would be necessary.
All right. And then what's up next Tuesday then for the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission agenda?
Boy, we have a big agenda. We have six or seven items on Tuesday night. I know we have four subdivision plat amendments. These are, you know, when I say we get about five or six of these come in a week, this is like, you know, roughly four of them showing up on this agenda, adjusting property lines, adjusting building pad locations. So we have those. Probably the one of interest to the listening community is the continued discussion, possible action on the Colby School. So that will be discussed on Tuesday night as well.
All right. And then what's next with Dakota Pacific? This is the formerly known as the Park City Tech Park. Do we even have a name for this development yet?
I don't believe that there is a name that is going to be the name that sticks. We've just been calling it the development at Dakota Pacific. I know there'll probably be, if it moves forward, a better name associated with that. We just call it the Tech Park Revisions in-house. It's scheduled for a public hearing on June 23rd. This will be the first chance for the public to actually come in, ask questions, give comments. I know that the applicant, the developer, Dakota Pacific, have been working on a public outreach program here that's going to be coming up from, I think, the first time this ever got reviewed or discussed in front of the Planning Commission. There was a strong expectation, certainly on the part of the Snyderville Basin Commission, but I would think from the applicant as well, to be able to reach out to the community. And it had always been envisioned that it would be done through a series of live open houses and workshops. But given where we are today with COVID-19 and the social distancing, we're going to attempt to do that, or I should say that applicant's going to attempt to do that via sort of a digital format. I can say with great confidence that by the time this continues to be worked through the Planning Commission and by the time it gets to the council, we will see that there will be ample opportunity for not only the public to be educated as to the exact details of the project, but to be able to weigh in as well, and hopefully here really soon in a more live in-person format. But we do have that first meeting for public input scheduled for June 23.
So what's the status of the property swap? It sounds like the last story we did with this were because that property swap hasn't happened between the developers and Summit County, we're now talking about surface parking instead of structured parking.
Well, there's no exchanges of land as a result of this current application. When the project first was submitted and originally reviewed by the Planning Commission, it took a look at sort of a broader neighborhood land plan that include county property, the Richens Library property and some of the other holdings in the area. The application has since been modified and pulled back to only be addressing the Tech Park lands, the lands that are owned by Dakota Pacific. Now, with me just saying that, that doesn't necessarily close the door to future discussions on how this would integrate, particularly with county-owned land. It's just at this stage, with it being at the Planning Commission can't necessarily speak for the council or take action or make decisions on county-owned lands. That's the purview of the council. So the plan has been, again, pulled back only to address their properties. It is possible in the future that if there are going to be some either sharing of spaces or connections of spaces or even land exchanges, that would occur, could only occur at the council level. So when the Planning Commission makes the recommendation, it will not be a recommendation that will necessarily or specifically be involving county-owned land.
All right. We recently reported the story of a moose who had fallen inside the foundation of a Summit Park home, which was filled with like 5 or 6 feet of water, and then reported on how the moose was rescued. We've been trying to track down somebody from your building department, but haven't been able to get a hold of anybody there. So talk about, I mean, the concern is, one, how could this happen? And two, again, a moose is one thing, but a small kid's another.
Boy. You've nailed it right on the head. Everybody was obviously concerned about that animal. And, you know, the good news was with the help of a lot of people, the neighborhood actually calling in and alerting us to the fact that the animal was in that foundation. And with the help of the Park City Fire District and, the DNR who had come out that actually were the folks that extracted the moose. We were really lucky that it wasn't a child. Candidly, you know, Leslie, we don't run into this type of situation very much. I think we were really lucky in this particular case. I mean, how do we prevent that from happening? Typically, how we prevent that from happening is making sure that development sites are adequately secured and managed. We do that through a construction mitigation plan. That's part of every building permit. In this particular situation, we had a property that I think the original permit goes back to 2017. When we issue a building permit, that permit is essentially good for 180 days. Once construction starts, so long as there is reasonable progress on the project, a permit can last until the project's completed. Theoretically, in a real extreme case, a number of years. This is a situation where there was work started, the foundation put in, there was a lapse. I'm not specifically sure on the exact history of the starts and the stops. I do know that as far back as last summer, the health department was notified of this and had been in contact with the property owner and issued some orders to secure that property. In this particular case, where we are right now is the health department, with the help of the county attorney's office, has issued an order of an order of abatement, and that order is requiring that that foundation be physically removed from the property and the property regraded back to as close to the original conditions as it was prior to that construction work. We've, with the help of both the health department and our code enforcement officer, we have a perimeter fence around that. We continue to monitor that. This is one of those cases where we had a dangerous situation out there, and we're lucky that there wasn't a loss of human life or animal life out there. You know, we have our building inspectors out in the field every day, and part of what they do is they look for situations like this. But once in a while, these things kind of are out of sight, hence out of mind. Really, it's the construction mitigation and the ongoing review of that by the people in the field. And we also rely on our partners, and those being the folks in the neighborhood who live in the area, that hopefully will keep us contacted when there are other sort of similar situations out there in the future. But the good news is no one or nothing was injured on that.
Okay, so why couldn't they just secure it somehow rather than having to pull the whole thing out? Or they have no plans to finish it? Is that what's happening?
No, that's a really good question. Our department has been in contact with the property owner who intends to move forward with the construction of a home on that property, like a lot of projects in that area. Access and sort of the making the building fit on the site is complicated. In this particular case, it's going to look like there will be the need for a plat amendment to deal with how they access the home. We have not received an application to that as of yet, and I have been told, I believe as recent as yesterday, that the property owner will be appealing the abatement order if he hasn't done so already. And I would suspect the reason he is doing that is because he wants to retain that foundation that's in the ground and incorporated into his revised plan.
Okay. So, I guess I just confused. I mean, now you're telling him he has to pull it out.
Yeah, well, our first fundamental primary foundational concern is public safety. We're being told he wants to move forward, but, you know, the time frame associated with that, since we don't have an application, is unknown. So we will continue to progress with the enforcement of the abatement order until otherwise assured that we have the public safety component of this fixed.
Okay.
We will work with the applicant, but again, or the property owner, but again, we want to make sure that the neighborhood is safe. And I'll be happy to continue the discussion next month just to kind of see what has transpired with the Board of Health. But that's kind of where we are today.
Okay. I need to leave it there. Pat, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie. Stay safe.
It's Pat Putt, Summit County Community Development Director. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:29. Well, with the easing of restrictions for COVID-19, we're starting to see team sports get back on the field and on the court and on the ice. Joining me on the phone with an update from Park City Soccer Club, I have the president of the board, Andrew Way. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. So my understanding is that Park City Soccer Club's athletes are back out there training.
They're back out there training. Yeah, it's great to see. I'm sure if you've driven around the community at all, you've seen lots of little kids in the Park City Dental Spa, gray training shirts, running around, having a great time being outside. It's made everyone feel pretty good.
Sure. So we're talking about, I think, 500 kids in who are part of this club?
Yeah. It's approximately 500 kids, 34 teams. You know, Park City Soccer Club was founded in 1994, so we've been doing this in the community for 26 years. And like I said, it's as an old fella, it warms the cockles of the hearts to see all the kids running around outside.
So these kids couldn't go to school. So, I mean, we're talking about essentially an elementary school size of 500 kids on these soccer teams. How, I mean, if they can't go to school, how can they play soccer?
Yeah, well, you know, we've been working really closely with the State Events Committee, the Summit County, Park City itself, Basin Recreation, and everyone to abide by regulations that have been imposed by any number of those entities. And we've been able to, the first phase of training was kids in masks, not sharing balls, any of that stuff in their own squares. So they were really social distancing while they're on the field, more doing individual training. And as restrictions have gradually loosened, again, these come from the state and from UISA and from the county and the city. These are nothing that we're making up ourselves. They've been returning to more and more typical training, and I am far from medical professional, but what I understand is that the people, all of us, are at less risk outside, and so it's a great place for the kids to be.
Yeah, so I mean, soccer is one of those sports, actually, though, that there's not a lot of touching, except, of course, for the goalie, you know, throw-ins and sideline throw-ins. So do you manage that anyway? I mean, you're wiping the ball off now and then, or...?
Yeah, coaches are. Coaches have sanitizer, and coaches are wiping the balls. They're managing contact. I mean, if you played soccer, there's a little more contact than you might imagine, but the coaches are managing that, and it's gone very well so far. And we've had, we've also been managing the parking lots, right? These by default, turn into social events for parents. I know I love being out there and seeing all my friends and parents of other kids and chatting, and we've really tried to restrict that as much as we can to keep parents safe as well, and keep any risk of transmission at an absolute minimum.
So what's the protocol? I mean, if somebody, perhaps a coach or a team manager or one of the kids' parents should come down with the disease, then what?
Luckily, because we're an organization, we're able to do a little bit of tracing, right? We could trace that back, and we could trace it forward. So if a coach, say, tested positive, then we would know all the kids that have been with that coach, and we would be able to issue warnings and move forward again with Summit County protocol on how to let people know and so on and so forth. So we're fairly confident in that area too. And so far so good. Everything's been great. And again, these still aren't typical practices. There's not a lot of huddling up. There's no physical contact with the coach, so on and so forth.
So still to happen though, are tryouts then for the 2020-2021 year?
Yes. Club tryouts, which we like to call player placements, are coming up. Boys and girls, six through 11. The week after, we'll have boys and girls 12 through 18, that's going to be out at the Park City Sports Complex. You'll see some this week and some next week. We're looking at approximately 30 teams for this year, and all these same safety protocols are in place for tryouts. If you're not available at that time or not ready, some families just aren't ready to have their kids come out to the field, and that's just fine. We've made a lot of positive differences this year coming into this club year. One of them is that if your kid wants to play, there's a place. We're not going to cut kids. We're not going to penalize kids for not being able to come to the tryouts because of health decisions. And so, if people out there that are interested and aren't comfortable coming to tryouts, then please just go to the website parkcitysoccer.org. And if you want to register for player placements, parkcitysoccer.org is there for you as well.
Okay. So you've got one coming up this week and then the following week, then you said, for the older kids?
Correct, yeah.
And that the sports complex, that's the fields there out at Quinn's Junction, is that what you refer that to?
Correct, yeah.
All right. We'll talk a little bit about what the soccer club offers to individuals.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, we've been part of the fabric of the community for 26 years, and something we're really proud of. We continue to be proud of what we put forth in terms of a product. Our mission is really to provide competitive soccer that emphasizes fun and enjoyment, respect and sportsmanship, and fosters physical, mental, and social growth. We're really focused on working on the whole kid, not just building soccer players, but using the sport of soccer as a mechanism to grow wonderful humans, to at least take part in that. We've got a lot of incredible programs. We have a college advisory program where, you know, kids coming towards up towards graduation in high school who are part of the club and are interested in playing college soccer. We've got a number of coaches and board members who played college soccer. And so we're able to help that way. And there's a formal college advisory program. Just this last year, Grayson Mercer is going to Michigan State to play Division I soccer. And Remy Eichner is going to Southern Utah to play soccer. So two kids out of the club are going to play college soccer just in the last year, and both of those took advantage of the college advisory program. They have a leadership program in addition to what the kids learn on the field. They can take leadership lessons and leadership classes, both basically teaching leadership skills for the field and beyond. And we also have a fitness and injury prevention program. There are a couple times, and sometimes it's gender specific, where kids are more particularly at risk for certain kinds of injuries than they may be in a different part of their lives as they grow. And so we have specific fitness and injury prevention programs done by a professional that addresses those, and then general injury prevention as well.
All right, and I know,
and that's in addition to all the year round indoor and outdoor soccer.
Yeah. So what did you miss out on then this spring? You would have had the tryouts sooner.
We would have normally had tryouts a little bit sooner, and the kids missed out on their spring season. So in Utah, we have the club soccer has a fall season, which will be anywhere between 8 and 14 games, and then they'll have a spring season, which will be the same. And then they train at basin recreation indoor facilities over the winter. And so the kids missed out on their whole spring season, and there was a number of disappointments there. Teams had a great season who were moving up a division, didn't get to do that. There were high school girls, they don't play in the fall because they're playing their high school season, so they only play club in the spring, and they didn't get to do that. And I know some of those girls, and I know that was really painful for a lot of them. And as parents, selfishly, I missed watching my kids. I love watching my kids play anything, really. I know all of us parents were missing one another. The social scene on the sidelines is really great. We do a great job of really integrating the whole community into not just a club for players, but also a club for families and a club for parents. And we've had, I know we all missed out on that. But mainly the kids missed out on their season. So it's really cool. They're going to do UYSA, which is Utah Youth Soccer Association, is putting on a summer friendly league. So starting towards the end of June, these new teams that are formed at placements over the next couple of weeks are going to be able to play 6, 7, 8 games in a quick league style, calendarized tournament, if you will. And that's going to be really fun. So a lot of the kids that didn't get their spring season will get these games. And then, of course, as we move into a different restriction model here in the county, it looks as though we're going to be able to hold the Park City Extreme Cup, which is arguably the largest youth soccer tournament in the Intermountain West. And it's famous. It draws hundreds and hundreds of teams. This year, it's only going to be in-state teams. There's a number of different ways where we're scaling it back to be safe, but all the kids and families I know are really excited for Extreme Cup as well.
Okay,
and that's in July.
July 23rd through the 25th. So, I mean, what do you expect? I mean, you go from hundreds of teams down to how many?
I don't know. That's a really good question. And I think that if I were to throw out a specific number, it would be certainly uneducated. We haven't, again, it's going to be restricted to Utah teams. In the past, in general, we see teams from Nevada and Idaho and Colorado and sometimes even further afield come. As everyone knows, Park City is a pretty great place to come during the summer, so it's an attractive option for families in addition to the soccer. This year is only going to be Utah, and we're going to be doing fewer games because we're going to space out the game time. So in the past, you might have a game end at 9:55 a.m. and the next one starting at 10, and you have a lot of interchange on that soccer field. We've been trying, So now that game that ends at 9:55, we might not have another game there until 10:15 or 10:20 or 10:25, so that there's more time for people to clear the field. There's not as much interaction between folks on the field. And again, that's part of our social distancing protocols. That'll be different this year. And the fields will be spaced further apart. In the past, we've crammed as many fields as we can on there because so many people want to play. And there's no concessions. There's no gathering points. Things are going to be really different. We should still be able to get a couple of hundred teams. And for those, a lot of people know, but for those that don't know, the proceeds from the Extreme Cup largely fund our scholarship program. We gave over $70,000 in scholarships last year because a really important part of that of our mission here is that is, you know, soccer for all. Everyone gets to play. If you want to play, we'll figure it out. We're pleased, obviously, for a number of reasons that we're able to have the tournament this year, and not least of which is to continue to be able to fund the scholarship program.
Okay. Andrew, anything else you wanted to mention?
I just want to say thanks. Love KPCW, and we'll see you out there on the field. If anyone has any questions whatsoever, parkcitysoccer.org. And thanks again for having me. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Andrew Way is the president of the board for the Park City Soccer Club. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, have you ever wondered when exactly the meek shall inherit the earth? This week's film, The Laundromat, lets you know not to hold your breath. Here's Barb Bretz with this week's Friday Film Review.
The Laundromat, directed by Steven Soderbergh, is based on Jake Berenstein's nonfiction book, Secrecy World, about the 2016 Panama Papers scandal. Jürgen Mosack, played by Gary Oldman, and Ramon Fonseca, played by Antonio Banderas, are narrators for three vignettes illustrating how the wealthy and powerful, armed with teams of accountants and lawyers, rake in and hide massive fortunes while putting the screws to everyone else. In the end, our narrators are also the perpetrators, partners running a Panamanian law firm. As in the 2015 film The Big Short, our narrators speak directly to us as they move through exotic and generic locations, explaining the terms and concepts of shifting financial resources and creating shell companies to hide and launder money. Several other recognizable actors, David Schwimmer, Melissa Rauch, James Cromwell, Sharon Stone, and Matt Forte, have small roles. However, it's Meryl Streep's character of Ellen Martin who obsesses over the unfairness and tries to untangle the dishonest and, you would think, illegal practices. A whistleblower, still known only as John Doe, eventually revealed 11.5 million documents proving 95% of the company's work consisted of inventing shell companies for tax avoidance. This particular operation was shut down. In the film, our perpetrators were only incarcerated for a moment. In real life, it was a whopping 3 months. The film ends with a powerful monologue from Streep's character. I can't tell you what you'll see because it would be a total spoiler, but her words are those of the actual whistleblower. In this system, our system, the slaves are unaware both of their status and of their masters, who exist in a world apart and where the shackles are hidden amongst reams of unreachable legalese. And Meryl, being Meryl, at the very end, delivers a call to action as she criticizes the USA for its role as a tax haven. Now is the time for real action, she says. It starts with asking questions. How can we expect change when those in power are actively passing laws that reinforce the status quo? The Laundromat is rated R and runs 1 hour, 36 minutes. This is Barb Bretz with your Friday Film Review. See you at the movies.
Republic Services, a proud supporter of KPC.
Park City Film, now presenting a virtual cinema at parkcityfilm.org.
Well, the Egyptian Theater will be reopening the theater for its Faro Club members, and kids will return to participate in youth theater this summer. On the phone with me, I have Jamie Wilcox, the director of Youth Theater, and we're hoping that Robin Cage, who is performing with Randy Barton in Broadway Faces, will join us here in a bit. But first, let's say good morning to Jamie. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi.
So what's the plan for this summer and Youth Theater?
Well, we had one of our most dynamic summers ever planned in our new Youth Theater space. And then, obviously, we had to make some major changes. We were waiting to see if we could even go forward at all, and now we know that we are. I had to revise the entire schedule to better fit, make the camps better fit into all of the guidelines. So we're starting on Monday. We still have a very varied schedule. There's still a lot for 5 to 18-year-olds, and we're planning to go for 9 weeks straight starting this coming Monday, June 8th.
Okay, so registrations have already been done?
Yeah, registration has been open for us a couple weeks now. Almost everything for next week is already sold out. We still have some spots available in for our teens to actually work with Robin doing acting for voiceover and acting for film. We still have a couple spots there. But yeah, but registration is up on our website, parkcityshows.com, then click on the Youth Theater page. At the top of the page, you can also see there, you can click and see all of our protocols, because there are a lot of protocols this summer to make sure that everyone stays safe and healthy.
Well, let's talk about some of those then. I mean, how are we going to hold these camps safely?
We are staggering all arrival times and departure times. Normally, I try to plan all of our camps start at the same time, end at the same time, so families can have multiple kids of different ages and multiple camps and only have one drop-off and one pickup. But in order to be safer, we are staggering those, and there, we even have staggered drop-off times on top of the staggered start times. So only five cars will be able to pull up at a time. Each kid will get out separately. We take their temperature. One at a time, they come in, go to hand-washing station, and then go to their classroom. Also, there's things, we do the same thing at lunchtime. And then there's things like, normally, for example, I have a camp starting on Monday called Act Out. Normally, we allow 20 kids into that camp, and we have at least two teachers. That is the same this year, but usually they're mixing throughout the day. And this year, each of those, we're going to have 10 kids each with one teacher in their own separate classroom, and they will not be mixing. And so smaller groups than usual, and in their own space throughout the day.
Okay. Tell me what they're going to be working on. Are all of the camps different or different weeks?
All the camps are different, different age groups. Our age groups tend to be 5 to 7, 8 to 12 in teens. There's some variation in between on that. And we're doing everything still from film to puppetry to musical theater. We're social distancing in the classrooms, but all of our teachers, we're taking it as a really fun challenge. I know myself, I tend to be more creative within boundaries, within rules, so I'm really taking that to the max this year. And we have our choreographers already working on choreography that can be as dynamic as it can possibly be with the students still social distancing. We're not trying to hide what's going on in the world. We're all very acutely aware of it, and we're using some of that, trying to take what's happening and turn it into a positive as far as people coming together and people uplifting each other. For example, our musical theater review camp in July, we've picked the theme No One Is Alone, that is from Into the Woods, and we've picked various Broadway musical songs on that theme. Really trying to uplift not only our students, but their families, and letting people know that, we're all still coming together and we're still a community and we're here for each other. Performances are going to be the most probably different part of everything. They're really the highlight of summers, the parents getting to come and watch kids live on stage. The kids are still going to be performing on stage, but we are going to record those and not allow audiences in. They'll be the best recordings we've ever done, best editing we've ever done, and then the parents get to watch that with their performer. And we're excited about that.
Okay, so we won't be opening the theater then for public performances.
We will not be opening the studios or the theater for big audiences to come in. That's correct.
Okay. So this is just for this summer. Things may change for this fall. We just don't know yet.
Yep, we are waiting to see on the fall. I'll do as much as I can possibly do. I'm looking at virtual options. We are actually doing a virtual camp this summer. We have a playwright that we've commissioned a couple times. She's going to be writing a brand new virtual play, and so we have 12 kids are able to be a part of that process. They can come and do it here, or they can do it from home, and we'll possibly premiere that in the fall. As you know, the world of the arts are just changing along with everything else, as they often have to do.
Sure. So I also see that you have a bilingual theater project. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we've been doing that for a few years now. The Solomon Fund helps us identify some families that would be best served by that. We've already sold it out for this coming Monday, which is really, really exciting. We have two Latinx theater makers and poets coming to work with these kids. Most of them are going to be between 5th and 8th grade, and they, again, will be split by age across the two teachers. And we're really excited. That's always an original project that they come up with for the end of the week performance, and we're really excited about that. And that is bookended at the end of the summer with our bilingual film camp, which is just our film camp that we always do, but it will be bilingual, Spanish and English.
Okay. And I believe I've got Robin Cage now on the phone. Are you there, Robin?
I am. I'm here. Hello. Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. Part of this next week, Jamie had mentioned that you'll be teaching the acting for voiceover and film. This is for kids, what, 12 to 18, entering 7th through 12th grade?
Yes, yes. Yeah, that one starts this coming Monday. And I'm a professional working voiceover artist, and it's something that I really love. So we're going to be covering a lot of the different kinds of voiceover, ranging from commercial to animation to narration and audiobooks and trailers and lots of fun stuff. And okay. Then in the afternoon, we'll be doing acting for film. So really learning how to perform on camera versus performing on stage.
Okay, so that's still open. And in the meantime, you, as in the introduction, I'd mentioned that you're performing with Randy Barton in the production of Broadway Faces. Can you tell me about that?
Absolutely. We started this Monday, and we are running four nights a week, Monday through Thursday. The show starts at 7 and goes to about 8:30, and it's kind of a cabaret show. Lots of different Broadway tunes ranging from, you know, jazz standards and like the really old ones all the way up to new stuff from Hamilton. We both sing. Randy is hosting and he's very entertaining. He's got a lot of great jokes. And it's a real show. We have video, we have costume changes, props, and we've gotten a great response so far. And we've taken a lot of measures to sort of ensure the safety of the audience. Everyone is spaced with like a 6-foot radius surrounding them. We normally can seat a little over 350 people in the Egyptian. Right now our capacity is at 44. So we'd be putting couples very well distanced. So should be very safe. Randy and I are performing behind plexiglass screens. So we're shielding the audience from us. And it's been a lot of fun. I'm incredibly grateful to be able to be performing in the midst of a pandemic. And what they've done there is really, really pretty amazing.
So you and Randy also able to keep a safe distance from one another?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we want to stay healthy.
Yeah, and then I guess if there's a couple, they would be able to sit together.
Yes, couples are seated together. They can put groups of four up in the balcony. I think there's room for two groups of four. But other than that, yeah, everyone's really spaced apart.
And at this point, it's only open to Feral Club members, or is it open to everyone?
At the moment, it is open only for Feral Club members. So high-level supporters of the theater. And if anyone wants to become a Feral member, I know the theater could really use all the help we can get right now. They're hooking up the Pharaohs with pre-placed goodie bags and wine or beer and some swag, and it's a socially distanced party.
All right.
What it is.
And shows are actually happening, like, as you mentioned, Monday through Thursday through July 30th at this point, huh?
That's what we have planned, and then we'll just sort of see how things play out with the virus and, you know, whether or not we're able to, like, raise our capacity or make it open to public. It remains to be seen. We're just sort of playing it by ear at this point.
Okay. Let's see, Jamie, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, just that we are very excited to still be offering the high-quality programming that our families expect from us in the safest way possible, and really excited to get these kids in a room with each other when they haven't been around their friends for quite a while, and even if they have to high-five from 6 feet apart, I still think that's worthwhile.
Okay, and in addition to the performances of Broadway Faces, Robin, you'll also be teaching at least one of these youth theater courses?
I'm teaching a bunch of them, actually.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm doing the two that I mentioned earlier, and then also musical theater boot camp, audition boot camp, the musical Shakespeare and space songs, and a couple of others. You know, I think it's going to be a packed summer.
Okay,
we're putting Robin's expertise to very good use for our students.
Yeah, lucky kids. Okay, Jamie, Robin, I appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks so much, Leslie.
Well, summer school in the Park City School District begins soon. For the first time, it's being offered for free. The new online teaching paradigm will be used and had almost 600 students apply to participate for summer classes. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has details.
Park City School District Community Education Director Todd Claridge says virtual summer school will start June 15th and run through July 23rd. He says they'll offer a unique academic opportunity for students K through 8 this summer.
We're still doing academics in the morning. The schedule looks 9 to 12 for academics. Students will be pre-assessed, and then based on their assessments, we'll have an academic individual pathway designed for them, which is very unique. Students will start the academic program at 9 a.m. They'll go into a virtual classroom with a teacher and their classmates. They will have about 30 minutes of class time in this meeting. The teacher will go over our objective for the day and talk about any relevant information, teach a small mini lesson, and then the students will be released to work on their academic pathway.
In the past, summer school has attracted around 200 students. They've been overwhelmed with this summer's response.
Had registration over 565 students currently. Due to the high demand and numbers, we have had to cap it. So we are currently taking applications and reviewing them on a case-by-case basis. So hopefully we'll be able to accommodate all students.
Claridge says they are pre-testing all students for a baseline assessment so they can tailor an individual curriculum for each child.
Depending on their individual pathway, we're going to do mini lessons and small groups from 9 to 9:30, and then they'll work with their specific teachers from 9 until 12, all academics, literacy, math, reading, writing.
Summer school fees usually run about $125. This year, the district is waiving all fees. Claridge says summer school isn't just for remediation. It's open to everyone. They'll instruct with academics in the morning and enrichment programming in the afternoon.
We're also offering enrichment activities each afternoon, 12:30 to 2:30. We'll be offering these classes in the afternoon. We have activities scheduled such as fitness, cooking, art, STEM, escape room, percussion, recycling, coding, and dance. This year, we're also offering language classes for native Spanish speakers and students who are part of the DLI French and Spanish programs.
For students that had difficulty adjusting to the online school systems, Claridge says the outreach team is involved identifying individual needs.
We're working with our outreach team to do some home visits. If we can't reach these kids, we're going to do everything in our power to try to find out what the reason is. Is it a lack of, you know, understanding the Zoom or Google Meets, or is it not having a Wi-Fi hotspot? So we're actually going to be working with the families and our outreach team.
Claridge says they've been surprised by the number of teachers that want to get involved and teach in this unique summer format. They're going to have 18 to 20 teachers on staff along with the outreach coordinator. The program is for rising kindergarten students through eighth grade. The link to register for summer school can be found on kpcw.org. I'm Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
It's coming up now at 9 o'clock. Stay tuned for headline news from National Public Radio.